I'm John Strum, and this is Real Talk MS. It's December 26th, and we have a lot to talk about. I hope those of you who celebrate had a wonderful Christmas, and I hope everyone is ready to usher in a happy and healthy new year. As I mentioned last week, I always reserve the last two episodes of the year to revisit my favorite, most compelling, most important conversations that I've had over the past year. And one of the most important news stories this past year, one that will certainly have the greatest impact on everyone affected by MS, was a proposal from a panel of MS experts who comprise the International Advisory Committee on Clinical Trials in MS, that recommended adopting a new framework that leverages what scientists are continuing to learn about MS and redefines how we talk about MS, how we research MS, how we diagnose MS, and how we treat MS. It really changes how we think about MS. This new framework was first proposed in a paper published in late 2022, and in January of 2023, I interviewed Professor Tanya Kuhlman, the lead author of that paper, and we discussed why this international panel of distinguished experts was recommending changing something that's been in place for decades. About 8 weeks ago, an international panel of MS experts published a paper calling for a new framework for describing MS, diagnosing MS, and treating MS. Joining me today to talk about what that new framework is and why it's being recommended is the author of that paper, Professor Tanya Kuhlman. Professor Kuhlman is an associate professor at the Institute of Neuropathology at University Hospital Münster in Germany and a part-time adjunct professor in the Department of Neurology and Neurosurgery at McGill University. Welcome to the podcast, Professor Kuhlman.
Yeah, thank you, John, for hosting me. It's a great pleasure to join you for this podcast.
The majority of my listeners are living with MS, and from the moment of their diagnosis, they've become well acquainted with describing multiple sclerosis as relapsing remitting, secondary progressive, or primary progressive. This paper recommends changing that and instead describing MS based upon the specific physiological mechanisms that drive an individual's MS. So I want to begin our conversation by asking you the two questions that I know are on my listeners' minds. First, what does this proposed framework mean? And why is this panel of experts recommending changing something that's been in place for years now?
Yeah, so first it's a framework, and I think it's a first step in a most likely a long journey where we have to reconsider how we actually see MS. And the reason why we think this might be necessary is because we now know that you have the different clinical disease causes or clinical descriptors. However, there are really no big biologic difference between these different clinical disease causes. And if you want to treat MS successfully, I think you have to focus on the pathomechanism that is driving the disease. And that's the reason why we think we should reconsider how we see MS. And this is actually what we do in this framework.
When we talk about this new proposed framework, we're talking about sort of redefining MS, or at least discussing it differently in terms of mechanisms, biological, pathophysiological mechanisms that are occurring. Can you talk a little bit about what those mechanisms are and how it might be a little different than the way we sort of see MS today when we talk about it?
So in the past, we frequently described MS as a disease with two phases, the first disease phase being an inflammatory disease phase, and the secondary disease phase or the later disease phase being more a neurodegenerative disease phase. However, nowadays we know that inflammation persists through the whole disease course, and vice versa, neurodegeneration starts already very early during the disease course. And we have, on the one hand, inflammation in the brain, and that can be focal inflammation. These are the lesions that you can, for example, see on the MRI. But there's also non-focal inflammation. This is a diffuse inflammation in the what we call normal appearing white matter. And this inflammation persists through the disease course. And this is then associated with new degenerative damaging mechanisms. Some of them are more dominant at the beginning. Some other ones are more dominant later on. And these are the injury mechanisms. And on the other hand, we have repair and compensatory mechanisms that are able to, you know, to compensate for the injury caused by the inflammation. And these repair mechanisms, on the one hand, is something called remyelination. That means the formation of a new myelin sheath after a demyelinating event. And on the other hand, we have something that's called brain plasticity. So the brain is able, so if there is an injury in the brain, to compensate this damage due to this brain plasticity. So other parts of the brain can take over functions in damaged areas. And in the end, you have a balance from these between these injury mechanisms and these compensatory repair mechanisms. And this decides how your disease at a certain time point develops. So you could imagine, for example, at the beginning when you are younger, you have strong compensatory repair mechanisms, but these repair and compensatory mechanisms decrease over time and with age. And that then results in disease progression, for example.
Well, that sort of brings me to my next question. You just mentioned how some of these compensatory mechanisms fade as we age. The subject of age is one that's becoming more and more pronounced in terms of MS research. I'm wondering how this framework incorporates the concept of aging with MS and what that means in terms of some of these mechanisms that you're focusing on.
Yeah, so I think age is very important. So we know that age is a strong predictor of disease progression in MS. And as I guess many of us are aware, when we are getting older, many healing processes in our body are not working that well anymore. For example, if you have a little wound in the skin, if you're younger, it heals very quickly. If you get older, it may take longer. And the same happens also in the brain. And the reasons for this, let's say, impaired function of the cells, on the one hand, age affects the immune system. We know, for example, that the microglia cells that are local inflammatory cells in the brain, that they change with age and that they become kind of activated status, for example. And on the other hand, you have these cells in the brain like the oligodendrocytes that makes the myelin sheath or the neurons. They also show signs of aging and also their function decreases with age. And we are, I think, only at the beginning to understand really the mechanisms or the molecular mechanism responsible for this decrease in function in the cells in the brain. So also there we are at the beginning, unfortunately.
How might adopting this framework impact things like disease-modifying therapies? For instance, today, DMTs have been approved for relapsing remitting MS or active secondary progressive MS or primary progressive MS. If this framework or something like it is adopted, will all of these approved medications have to be sort of recategorized?
No, I think, I mean, as I said, I think it's a first step in a long journey. And of course, if we want to change the way how we see MS, we have to put, you know, everybody has to be on board, and it will be a long process that we discuss it with all the stakeholders, how we will manage this kind of process. And the idea is that if you consider MS as a disease that is driven by different pathologies, which are maybe different between patients and maybe change over time within a patient, the idea is that we have to identify the pattern mechanism that at this certain time point is driving the disease in an MS patient, and then to select the treatment that is best, that works best to address exactly this pattern mechanisms. So the idea is that we, you know, in the long term, will be able to have a more personalized medicine.
From what you're describing, it sounds as though exactly this new framework could lead to more personalized treatment that's addressing those specific pathophysiological mechanisms that are impacting that person.
Yes, correct. That's the idea. That's exactly the idea.
And Right now, a person living with MS goes in for a 6-month or annual check-in with their treating neurologist or MS specialist, and they do things like walk down that hallway in the office to get a time on their 25-foot walk and things along those lines. How might adopting a framework that is more about biological mechanisms change the patient's experience when they see their neurologist in clinic?
Yeah, so the idea is that we will develop a kind of, let's call it, toolbox that allows us to detect these different pattern mechanisms. And this might be a combination of MRI, for example, or other imaging technologies, or, for example, things you can measure in blood or in the CSF. And that with the combining of these different tools, you can say, okay, currently this pattern mechanism is driving your disease, and that's the reason why you will get this or that treatment.
We like to interpret any sort of change as being for the better. This one certainly seems to hold promise along the lines of clinical treatment, how clinical trials are done, how the regulators approve medications, and what those medications are actually going to be targeting in the future. That's how I would describe things. How would you describe the benefits of this proposed framework?
I think the benefit should be in the end that we have a better possibility to treat patients. On the one hand, that we have better diagnostic tools to treat the patients and to provide the patient with the best treatment that this person requires at this moment during his disease course. And on the other hand, this framework should also help to help researchers to reconsider how they design, for example, their experimental studies or trials. So, for example, as a pathologist, in the past, we tended to, for example, compare the histopathology characteristics from patients with either relapsing remitting MS, secondary progressive MS, or primary progressive MS. And of course, we learn something from doing these studies, but I think we can maybe learn more if we, for example, stratify patients, for example, according to the speed of disease progression. So patient with a rapid disease progression, for example, versus patient with a slow disease progression, and see, okay, what is the difference in pathological mechanisms there, instead of only focusing on these different clinical disease courses, just as to give it one example.
So in many ways, this proposed framework really represents sort of realigning the treatment diagnosis of MS with what science has taught us more recently. It's taking all that new information, all of that emerging information, and leveraging it for the benefit of the patient community.
Yes, correct. Yeah.
Well, this recommended framework represents quite a big leap in how we talk about MS, research MS, diagnose MS, and treat MS. At the beginning of our conversation, you called this paper a first step. Obviously, these things aren't going to happen overnight at all. But what do you see as the next step?
I think this kind of framework is the first step, you know, to intensify the discussion in the community and to think about it. Okay, how do we want to do it in the future? What would be the kind of tools that we need? Can we find common grounds? You know, we have, of course, again, then to think about it, okay, how do we want to describe then the disease? How do we want to decide at which state of the disease the patient is? What can we do with the regulators that we all have the same language, to put it that way?
Well, Dr. Tanya Kuhlman, I want to thank you for all you do to improve the lives of people living with MS. And thank you for taking time to help us understand what this new framework represents and how, at the end of the day, it's all about improving the quality of MS care.
Yeah, you're very welcome.
Following my conversation with Professor Kuhlman, many of you had questions. So I reached out to the National MS Society's Chief Advocacy Services and Science Officer, Dr. Tim Cutsey. And we talked about how this new framework for describing multiple sclerosis would impact people who were living with MS. A About 8 weeks ago, an international panel of MS experts published a paper calling for a new framework for describing MS, diagnosing MS, and treating MS. As you might imagine, this is a big subject, and in last week's episode of Real Talk MS, we talked about the proposed framework with the author of that paper, Professor Tanya Kuhlman. Today, I'm happy to welcome the National MS Society's Chief Advocacy Services and Science Officer, Dr. Tim Kutze, who's joining me to continue that conversation. Tim, welcome back to the podcast.
Well, hey, John, it's great to be back on the show with you.
As I just mentioned, last week, Professor Kuhlman shared some of her thoughts about this proposed framework with us. I'm hoping you'll start us off today by giving us your sense of what this proposed framework is all about. And I'll ask you one of the questions that I posed to Professor Kuhlman. Why is this panel of international experts recommending that we make a change from a system that's been in place for years?
That is a great and perceptive question. And so it might help your listeners to give you a sense of who is the International Advisory Committee on Clinical Trials in MS and, you know, what is this group of experts? You know, basically, it is a group that was created by the National MS Society almost 40 years ago now, at the time when we didn't have any disease modifying treatments. And there was a real hunger and a call for how do we do clinical trials? How do we organize and conduct those? And so that committee was created to help, you know, basically advise on how do we do clinical trials. That is, and this led to all of the disease modifying treatments we have today in terms of how they're structured. And one of the key issues that arose as we were starting to think about how to do clinical trials in the late 80s, early 90s is how we describe MS. And at the time, if a person had gone to a doctor and say the early 1990s and was going experiencing the symptoms of MS, getting diagnosed with MS, doctors would actually describe MS in a lot of different ways because, you know, some doctors would describe it one way, other doctors would describe it another way. And what the community quickly realized is that, you know, as we move into this era of new disease modifying treatments, we actually need to have more consistency in how we describe MS so that when a person is diagnosed, the doctor is able to say, here's the type of MS you have, here's what it's going to look like. And so the panel, you know, really took this on to say, you know, we need to be able to describe the disease in a way that makes sense to patients and doctors, and also that allows us to do clinical trials and make sure that we're recruiting people who have MS that, you know, potentially would be able to benefit and show us that this treatment does or doesn't work. And so that led to the creation of what we call the Lublin-Reingold clinical course descriptors. It's a mouthful. It's basically the framework that many people with MS are familiar with today of relapsing remitting MS, secondary progressive MS, primary progressive MS. And that, you know, those served us really well for a very long time. But, you know, that was 1996. A lot has happened since 1996. And one of the things that has developed over the last, you know, 4 to 5 years in particular is a recognition that these descriptors, which were incredibly useful early on, did not get to the question of what's going on inside a person in terms of what's happening with their MS. It talked about, you know, they describe, you know, did a person have relapses? Yes, that's what they were seeing and they were experiencing in the doctor. They didn't get at, you know, what's happening inside a person's brain and spinal cord that's leading to the relapse. They didn't get at, you know, what's happening in the disease that's perhaps tied to progression that is affecting the person's journey. And there's been a steady call from the community to say, you know, we need a way of describing MS that goes beyond what a doctor sees when a person comes to them saying that, you know, I'm having difficulty walking, you know, that's a clinical symptom, to being able to get to the point of having a way of describing MS that where the doctor can say, you have MS, you're at this stage on the journey, and this is what's happening in your brain and spinal cord, and this is how we're going to treat it. It's a big vision. It's a and one that I think, you know, puts us with MS on a path to what your listeners might be familiar, for example, in when someone is perhaps facing cancer. And a person is, you know, their doctor says, you know, you have this cancer, you have a stage one and we're going to treat you at stage one with these treatments, or you're a little further along and you're going to treat these treatments. We're not there yet. And that's what this paper is about. So we can come at, you know, get into that a little bit. But that's the context for the journey that brought us to today.
You know, today, people who are living with MS, as you pointed out, they've received a diagnosis of either relapsing, remitting, secondary progressive, primary progressive MS. Now, we hope when they receive that diagnosis, their neurologist went ahead and explained what their particular subtype of MS would mean in terms of their MS journey, their likely disease course. So they have, at the very least, a basic understanding of what all that means, what it looks and what it feels like. As we begin to look at MS and define it in terms of these biological mechanisms that may be at work, these the things that are actually happening in that person's brain and spinal cord, where does that leave the person who's living with MS and their ability to understand the status of their MS?
So that's a really important question, because I think one of the things I would emphasize to your audience is that, you know, what this paper talked about is the need for us to find a new framework for describing MS that really reflected what was going on inside that person's brain. You know, things like, you know, they have inflammation that's happening over time that may come and go, or, you know, they may be losing nerve cells, because one of the things that we're learning is that, you know, the health of a brain cell depends, and nerve cells depends a lot on what I'll call as the battery packs of every cell, the mitochondria they're called. I'm sure everybody has a phone, you know that when the battery dies, that's not a good thing. Well, that in MS, we're learning that the battery packs of nerve cells actually start becoming dysfunctional. And so those cells become dysfunctional and die, and people lose nerve cells. You know, all of these are the things that contribute to the disease that shows up in a person's, you know, progression, as the doctor may say, or they show up in losing nerve cells that contribute to how people think and the cognitive dimensions. And, you know, one of the aspects of this proposal is that we said we need to get at understanding all these different pathways so that we can then develop a framework that says, okay, along this stage of a person's journey, when they reach progressive MS, these are the things we see and understand are going awry, which may be different from where they are in an earlier part of a person's journey. And what doctors would like to get to is to be able to say, what can I treat at this point? What can I treat at the next point? What can I treat at a further part of the journey? And you know, we're going to be in a be in a period here where the way we talk about MS now in terms of relapsing MS, progressive MS, is going to be the way we have for, you know, a period of time, because, you know, those descriptors do serve a purpose of helping doctors and patients understand where they are in their journey. And the work that we're doing now is to say, when we build this framework, we are going to need to transition from our existing state to this future state and help people sort of see, if a doctor says to you, you have secondary progressive MS today, what does that mean in this new framework? Where am I in that framework? Where do I see myself? And what does that mean for how the doctor is going to describe the disease I have? And importantly, which I think what your listeners will be asking for is, like, what does that mean for the treatments I can get at a different part of that journey? It also has a really, I'd say, very important implication for how we do research and how we develop treatments. Because one of the gaps we've had is, in terms of drug development, is having the ability to say, this treatment is focusing on this part of the disease during this phase of a person's disease journey. They've really been kind of broad spectrum. And when one starts getting specific about, let's say, you know, targeting the battery packs of the nervous system, well, you could actually begin to think about, you know, a treatment that goes right at that. And if we know that that is part of a person's disease process a little, and say maybe 10 years after they were diagnosed with MS, then the doctor actually starts to have tools that lets them treat MS in a precise manner, where they say, we're going to use this set of treatments at this point in the disease. If and when you get to here, this is the toolbox we'll have. And I realize that your listeners might be saying, that's an incredibly aspirational thing. Absolutely. And I think that's what we need to aspire to. The way we change the journey of MS, which is what I'm really passionately committed to, is by creating a world where when we talk about modifying disease, we go beyond just sort of broad categories of like, we're going to change the disease, to saying, we're going to address the demyelination, the loss of brain cells here. We're going to provide a treatment that rebuilds myelin here at this stage of the journey. But to do all of that, it does require a vision that says, here's what the disease looks like across the continuum, and then how we talk about it and describe it. So I think hopefully that's what gets at the question that your listeners want. I'm excited to describe it because I think this is the future that we need to get to for MS.
If anyone knows just a few people who are living with MS, and most people who are living with MS do, they know that, gee, this person seems to have lots of relapses. This person, I've never seen them have a relapse, or this person seems to be progressing faster, and yet they can all be categorized quite the same way. So I guess what I'm hearing as part of this conversation is this is going to really allow for personalized treatment so that your MS, the exact things, as you put it, that are happening in your brain and spinal cord are the things that are going to be addressed, which may be different than the next person that neurologist sees in clinic that day.
Exactly. You know, and the way I describe it is that, you know, when we think about the nearly 1 million people who've heard the words, you have MS in the United States, that's 1 million unique individuals who have their own unique MS and who are on their own unique MS journey, some of whom may be further along than others. There may be some people, right, that by the time the show has aired, heard the day before the show aired that you have MS and they're listening to, or they might have lived with MS for 10 years. What we want to get to is, rather than saying, here's how the MS population is categorized, it's what's, you know, one person, one doctor at a time, and what is happening in that person that the doctor can then address. And that's not to say that the existing state we have is somehow broken. I mean, having disease-modifying treatments now almost 30 years, we can say that they have really changed and they've been transformative in terms of how MS is treated. The fact that we can diagnose MS quicker today, still not quickly enough for my taste and my concern. There still takes too long for some individuals. We have to address that as well. That, you know, we are in a strong starting point, but to your point, to get to, you know, what doctors want to be able to say is, the person in front of me, what's the toolbox I can have to address where they are in their disease journey? And this is what having a framework that is grounded in, you know, we know that, for example, one of the things we talk about in this paper is that, you know, the aging process, biological aging, really is an important consideration in MS. And, you know, one of the experts, as we were walking through the paper, said to us, you know, I've got a number of patients who I've seen for 15 years. And sometimes when I'm assessing, you know, what's happening in their MS, you know, the question I have is, are they walking slower because they're older or they're MS? And, you know, this is one of those aspects that as we get older, our body doesn't heal as quickly. There's aspects that affect many things, but they could also be contributing and amplifying to what's going on in a person's progression. And what we talk about in this paper is that we need to be able to talk about and consider the fact that as the aging process takes effect, it also means that the brain doesn't heal as quickly, doesn't remyelinate as efficiently, you know, and there's this balance between age and the ability of the body to repair itself and heal itself. And, you know, all of these are factors that up until now, we've not really brought them in to the conversation. And the vision from the paper and the work we want to do is to say, now that we know the biology of what's going on, how do we then translate it into a set of tools that can guide the doctor-patient interaction, that can help people understand where am I on this journey, but that also can help the researchers who are looking to try to get new treatments also to focus in, let's target this aspect of the disease. So that, you know, when we're designing a clinical trial, you can imagine, if I come back to the battery packs again, to say a clinical trial of a drug specifically focused on ensuring that nerve cells maintain the energy they need in order to have a healthy brain. That's not how we do clinical trials today, but that's the kind of future. And to get to that place, you need to have a very precise framework like we're talking about.
And when I first introduced our conversation today, I said this proposed framework is going to change the way we talk about MS, but it's certainly more far-reaching than how we talk about things. I can see a whole row of dominoes kind of tipping over and reinventing themselves as something a little more potent, a little more specific to each individual patient. But as you've mentioned, a clinical trial design is going to be reconsidered. Mm-hmm. Regulators like the FDA in the US and the EMA in Europe are going to reconsider how and what they're approving in terms of treatment and disease modifying therapies in the future. Clinicians are going to have these various toolboxes to be able to access and treat that patient with the specific kinds of treatments that are going to be best suited for them. That's a lot of change. Seems like a pretty heavy lift. So what do you see as the next steps in what sounds like a necessarily long process?
Yeah, no, it's a great question, and we're moving methodically because, you know, the way we describe MS, you know, affects a lot of people today, and we know that when, as you pointed out, a lot of change management needs to happen. You know, one of the challenges we face is the way we describe MS in the paper. If you don't mind my quoting, the phrase we use, it's deeply embedded in our healthcare system, and you know, people with MS use these descriptors to help them understand what's happening in their MS. Doctors use them to, you know, make decisions. Regulators use them when they approve new drugs. Health insurers, you know, are using them to, you know, around that. So if you're going to change something that is so far reaching, the first step you need to understand is, now that we have the biology that we think needs to be incorporated, is how would you structure it? What would you ask the model to do? You know, if you were going to describe MS in different stages, what would be those stages? What would be the landmarks for those? And then importantly, you know, what's the science? You know, do you have the data to back up that if you believe this is how it should be organized, how the MS journey should look, you know, what does it look like? And then importantly, and I know you're helping us contribute to this, is what does this mean for people? What does this mean for when they go to the doctor? And then importantly, also, how do people who have lived with a descriptor today move into this new era and what it means for them and their in treatment and care? And I'd say what really motivates me around this is to ensure that, you know, people who live with MS, people who are partners to people living with MS, are able to know that we're paying attention to what's happening here and are able to navigate this journey. Because at the end of the day, it is about people affected by MS. The leaders of this committee, you know, it is all about, you know, better treatments, better care for people affected by MS, being able to bring the kinds of certainty that we're seeing in other diseases, the precision we're seeing in other diseases to MS. And we're at a place now. Why we can do this now is the investment in all of the research that we talk about in our Pathways to Cures roadmap is starting to bear fruit. We can look inside a brain and see a lot of what's going on in a person. We have the tools to monitor the disease activity like we never had before. And now it's our responsibility to say, in this environment, how do we evolve and adapt how we describe MS? We have to, because it's essential that we create a place where every interaction with a doctor, whether a person lived with MS 20 years or 2 days, can be guided by this framework.
You know, every week on this podcast, I try to talk about some of the exciting research going on. And at some point, someone has to ask the question, well, what are we doing with all these discoveries? What are we doing with all these new insights that we didn't have 5, 10, 15, 20 years ago? How can they make an impact today? And I think we're seeing that. What this really represents is leveraging all of the good science that's been done and continues to be done, and leveraging it in a way that's going to really make a profound difference in how that person with MS is going to be treated. I think that's beyond amazing.
Well, and I'll add, you know, you're so right. I mean, this is for me what having the privilege of working at the society and the role that I have, you know, there are so many people that have contributed to the science here. And by that, I mean, you know, this is, we're not talking about laboratory, you know, type of work. You know, the ability to make the insights we had in the paper came because people living with MS participated in the research studies, participated in the clinical trials, participated in the work to be able to understand how to do MRI better, to give their blood samples, to participate in these biomarker studies that are so important for developing the test to monitor the disease. And we wouldn't be here without the participation of so many people for whom, you know, MS has defined their life. But by engaging and participating in the process, they are making a difference. We wouldn't be here without that. And I'm really grateful that so many people contributed over so long to this work. And really, it's going to set us up for an incredible future, I believe.
Well, Dr. Tim Cutsey, thank you for taking the time to help us understand what this new framework is about and how, at the end of the day, it's all about improving quality, the level of care for everyone living with MS.
Thank you, John. It was great to be with you.
That's going to wrap up this episode of Real Talk MS. Real Talk MS is powered by the National MS Society. And you can share this episode of the podcast by letting your friends or family members know that all they have to do is point their web browser at realtalkms.com/330. You'll find that link in today's show notes, so you can easily copy and paste it right into an email or a text. And if you have a minute, I hope you'll visit the Apple App Store or the Google Play Store and download the free Real Talk MS app for your iOS or Android smartphone or tablet. It's the best way for us to stay connected. The app will automatically download the latest episode of Real Talk MS. You'll be able to access any of our past episodes. You'll be able to save your favorite episodes. And it's a great way for me to share bonus content with you. The app is free, so I hope you'll download it today. I'm John Strum. Thanks for listening. Stay safe and have a happy new year.